10 on the agenda, status update regarding potential updates and clarifications to the regional basin plan.
Thank you, Chairman Humphrey and members of the board. My name is Chuck Curtis. I'm a supervising engineer here in the Southwick Tahoe office. And Bob Larson and I will be giving this presentation an update of the basin plan. And I'll need Sue's help to advance slides because the... Thank you very much. So, the Water Board regulates the discharge of waste to water. And we do that under the authority of the Port of Florida Water Quality Control Act, which is part of the state's water code, and under other state and federal regulations. Region-specific regulations that the Water Board implements. Yes. Are found in the Water Board's basin plan, or the water quality control plan for the Lahontan region. Now, the last major revision of this basin plan occurred in 1994. In the meantime, we've passed various amendments to the basin plan, primarily for TMDLs and other minor changes to the basin plan. Over the years, the Water Board members...
It's working.
It's working. Thank you. Water Board members, staff, dischargers, and other interested persons have identified numerous changes to the basin plan that they thought the board should consider. Since about 2010, Water Board staff have had a concentrated effort to marshal these potential changes, or certain ones of them, into a set of amendments that we would bring to the board. These amendments primarily address streamlining our regulations, giving the board more flexibility for considering potential discharges, and then improving the overall clarity and consistency of our regulation and how we implement it. All right. That effort resulted in an initial set of draft amendments that staff put out for public comment in January of this year. And we came to the board in February and March with a couple of scoping meetings to get input on the potential environmental effects that staff should evaluate in evaluation of what these potential amendments, their potential effect on the environment might be. Since that time, we've received additional comments, primarily internal comments from staff, on those proposed changes, and we've been tweaking that language since then. So the potential changes that we're proposing are primarily identified in this slide here. We're here today to get input from the board and the public on these proposed changes and any tweaks that you think we might need to put to those, or whether we're on the right track here. So, as I said earlier, these changes are primarily to add additional flexibility to the board, clarify our regulations, and to update those policies and procedures that are now outdated or are not consistent with the current policy and implementation procedures. Some of these proposed changes, especially those on our waste discharge prohibitions and exemption criteria, and on the non-degradation objective, could be considered significant policy changes. And so those are areas where I, especially want the board to pay particular consideration. The first of these is the anti-degradation policy and our non-degradation objective. There's a state anti-degradation policy or resolution 6816 that the water boards throughout the state consider and apply in the waste discharge requirements and other discharges of waste to water. There's also a federal anti-degradation policy that the state has found that our state policy is consistent with. In the 1990s, during the last update, we added a non-degradation objective. And that objective points to the state anti-degradation policy. And we also added a prohibition on the discharge of waste that violates that non-degradation objective. And it causes some problems because the anti-degradation policy is a detailed policy that requires the board to evaluate effects of the discharge, its benefit to the people of the state, how it's controlled, and myriad considerations. And as a result, this non-degradation objective, determining compliance with that, is not readily known without that evaluation by the board. So staff is proposing to remove that non-degradation objective and clarify that the applicability of the anti-degradation policy. Removal of the non-degradation objective would not eliminate any of the board's authority to regulate discharges that could affect or degrade water quality. You already have those authorities under the Water Code, under your waste discharge permits, and under other prohibitions. We plan to add language explicitly adding mixing zones or the authority to grant those into the basin plan. For priority pollutants, there is a state policy that applies to water, surface waters under federal jurisdiction, those where we give MPDES permits. So we are going to add language that acknowledges that state policy but broadens the ability of this board to grant mixing zones for waters not covered by the state policy. That would be for constituents that are not covered by the state policy, or for waters such as groundwater, or waters that are not under federal surface waters that are under that are waters of the state and not of the federal government. So the criteria that we would include in those mixing zones are the same that are found in the state's implementation policy for toxics. There's a whole list of 11 different conditions that the waste would have to meet in order to allow a mixing zone. The most significant part, I think, of the basin plan changes are changes to the prohibitions and exemptions. Now, a key thing that we're doing is eliminating duplicative prohibitions. We have many regions or hydrologic area unit-specific prohibitions that duplicate region-wide prohibitions that we have, and we'll be eliminating those because it's not needed and it can cause some problems in implementability. We will be adding a prohibition on unauthorized discharges. Currently, we don't have an explicit prohibition on this, but this will give the board greater direct flexibility in bringing enforcement against the discharge that the board hasn't authorized. We're also going to be adding exemption criteria for a great number of prohibitions that we have that don't have any exemption criteria right now. Not all, but most. That would allow the board to grant exemptions where they currently, in the written policy, have no authority to do so. That would give the board more flexibility to allow such discharges. Now, this might be considered a significant policy change for the board because we have a written policy, the basin plan, that says, for example, you cannot discharge any waste to this water. In fact, it's not such a big policy change or shift because this board and boards in the past have allowed discharges to these waters all along, have required in their permits conditions that are protective of beneficial uses and water quality and have been protective of water quality. So this will remove that inconsistency in application of our regulations by explicitly acknowledging that, yeah, there might be a very good reason for this board to allow a discharge to these waters, and under these conditions can do so and still be protective of water quality. And there are certain prohibitions that we plan to keep without any exemption criteria. And this includes the discharge of untreated sewage, garbage, or solid waste to surface water. And also septic tank pumpings and chemical toilet wastes when there's a facility available to discharge those to. These prohibitions are ones that, based on past intent of the board and staff, can't imagine a situation where the board might want to allow such discharges to our surface waters. We're also planning to add an automatic exemption, a conditional exemption, for a number of low-threat discharges. Both the state and regional boards have identified various types of discharges that pose low threat or limited threat to water quality. And under certain conditions, those discharges can be done with really no impact to water quality. Because we have certain prohibitions, even if we have a general permit or a waiver of waste discharge requirements for these types of low-threat discharges, staff still has to put in the time to go through the prohibition exemption process, engage either the executive officer or this board in explicitly granting those prohibition exemptions. We feel for these specific types of prohibitions and given the conditions that we've identified that these should be given an upfront exemption to the prohibitions. Next, with the Truckee River floodplain prohibition, we plan to modify that prohibition to explicitly identify that it's floodplain function that we're trying to protect, preserve, and restore. Floodplain function includes certainly flood flow routing through the area, but it also includes other biologic, hydrologic, geomorphic factors in addition to just flood routing. This change will allow the board to grant discharges to floodplains or changes in floodplains that our current prohibitions would not allow, even though those floodplain changes or restoration efforts might be very beneficial for the floodplain as a whole, but based on the strict reading of our standard now, it did not allow. Also, we plan to remove the wording for the sole intent of erosion control projects. It has to meet, the project has to be solely for the intent of erosion control or to mitigate water quality problems. Because there are projects that might have, as part of them, a floodplain element, but the overall project might be some other project entirely. But currently, if that entire project is not just about restoring that floodplain, we can't approve it. So we will make that change. And we'll clarify that it's the project elements in the floodplain that we're really concerned with. That's what we're trying to protect or restore, and it's really those floodplains or those elements of the project that we need to consider in considering the exemption criteria and whether the project meets those criteria and is protective of water quality and its beneficial uses. Now I'd like to turn it over to staff environmental scientist Bob Larson for the rest of the story.
Thanks, Chuck. As Chuck said, my name is Bob Larson. I'm a senior environmental scientist working primarily on issues here at Lake Tahoe. I only have 3 slides of material. I'm going to spend most of my time with this first slide, and the other 2 should go pretty quickly. So looking first at the proposed basin plan changes for Lake Tahoe. Our basin plan has an entire chapter, Chapter 5, devoted to the water quality standards and protection measures for Lake Tahoe. Although, as Chuck indicated, there are a number of portions of the basin plan that need updating, I could argue that none is more outdated and inconsistent with current policy than Chapter 5. The current basin plan language is based on the 1989 Clean Water Act Section 208 Water Quality Management Plan. When the State Water Board adopted that plan in 1989, they directed the regional board to incorporate the relevant portions of the 208 plan into our basin plan. Consequently, our basin plan includes abundant detail on development restrictions, impervious coverage policy, and other land use regulations described by that 208 plan. In essence, the existing basin plan language reflects the approach of using land use policy as a proxy for water quality protection. This made sense in 1989 because that was the primary threat to water quality, what was due to unmanaged urban development in the Lake Tahoe region. We've come a long way since that time. The Lake Tahoe TMDL provides us a more robust and scientifically based understanding of the causes of Lake Tahoe's clarity loss. As we heard this morning, we're also gaining a better understanding of the nearshore conditions and the factors causing impairment in that area. The Lake Tahoe TMDL also provides us with a plan for reducing the pollutant loading from existing development and a path for restoring some of the disturbed lands. Furthermore, after nearly a decade of public engagement and stakeholder involvement, the Tahoe Regional Planning Agency updated its regional plan in December of 2012 and soon after prepared an updated 208 Water Quality Management Plan. The updated 208 plan references the new regional plan and the Lake Tahoe TMDL as the primary documents guiding land use and regulatory policy in the Lake Tahoe Basin. In February of this year, this board recommended that the State Water Board approve the updated 208 plan. In May, following testimony from the Sierra Club and other interested stakeholders, the State Water Board did just that and approved that updated 208 plan. The US EPA accepted that plan in June of this year. So with the update of the 208 plan and the regional plan, our basin plan is now inconsistent with current regulatory and land use policy in the Lake Tahoe region. The proposed amendments will change the existing language by removing all references to the 1989 208 plan and the associated policies, programs, and restrictions. This means eliminating almost entire sections of Chapter 5, entire subheadings, for instance, regarding development restrictions will go away. Every reference to that 1989 plan will be eliminated. It's important to note that almost all the Water Board policies that are unrelated to the 208 plan will remain unchanged. The recently adopted Lake Tahoe TMDL language, for instance, and the associated amendments on stormwater requirements will remain unchanged. Staff are also proposing some edits to the waste discharge prohibitions, consistent with what Chuck was just describing, to clarify the applications of those prohibitions and the exemption criteria. Doing so in Chapter 5 will not change the type of activities that are potentially exempt, but rather simplify the exemption process for water quality improvement efforts and restoration projects. Okay, the quick slides. Along with the changes that Chuck and I have summarized, staff also plan to take this opportunity to do a little basin plan housekeeping. In addition to correcting typographic and grammatical errors, the basin plan amendment will replace outdated information and policy references with new information. A particular note on the three policies that we've listed here, the newly adopted on-site wastewater treatment facilities policy, the non-point source implementation policy, and the recycled water policy. The current basin plan lacks current references to these important policies, and those amendments will address that deficiency. Looking at next steps, again, as Chuck mentioned, we're presenting you today in the interest of engaging the board, the public, and other interested stakeholders in this process. Once we synthesize comments from our discussion today, we'll be working to finalize the proposed basin plan amendment language. Once we finalize that language, we will begin working on drafting the environmental analysis that will consider the potential impacts of the proposed changes on the environment. If all goes well, we'll release the final draft language and the environmental document late next month. More likely, it will probably be in January of next year. During the comment period, which is expected to extend for about 45 days, a minimum of 45 days, possibly more, we plan to meet directly with interested parties to discuss any outstanding concerns and potentially hold another board workshop to discuss outstanding issues. Following those outreach activities, we plan to bring an item before the board for consideration in either February or April of the coming year to adopt the proposed amendments. With that, Chuck or I would be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Thank you. Any questions or comments, Mr. Dias?
Yes, pertaining to slide 8. The third bullet. Chuck, I don't remember what you said about the septic tank pumping.
In the southern part of our region, in certain areas, we have a prohibition that has no exemption criteria that says for septic tank pumpings and chemical toilet wastes, you're prohibited from discharging those once there's an available wastewater treatment facility that can accept those in that area. In certain areas or region, you know, there weren't those types of facilities. So,
what do they do?
Well, they either discharge it to land, which, you know, is not ideal, or manage it in another manner. Some of those, yes, do go to landfills.
Okay,
so.
Don't go away. Stand down.
One bullet up, untreated sewage. Can you tell me how we regulate, if we regulate, private collection systems in the basin, tower basin? I know we regulate and require inspection of lines of all of the publicly managed wastewater collection and treatment systems. But what about, we have lots of small subdivisions, sometimes they're of considerable size, that have an internal collection system, even in some cases pumping, that is entirely within their own management. Do we require any monitoring of the condition of that plumbing, those systems?
Well, we often do have waste discharge requirements on those types of facilities.
They typically have a
package treatment plant.
There aren't any package treatment
plants. Oh, you're talking
in the
about
basin only.
In the basin, all are collected by public facilities, except.
Maybe Bob or I can help you.
The short answer is we don't, that I'm aware of, have any regulations. As you indicate, there are a number of smaller, older collection systems that ultimately discharge to, I believe all of them go to the TCPUD trunk lines that ultimately go to that system, but there are some collection systems that at this point, unless the management wants to correct me, are at this point are unregulated. It is certainly something that we're aware of, again, in light of the discussion we've been having about nearshore and the importance of the integrity of the collection conveyance systems. It is something that's on our radar screen to look at, and there's some discussions underway with some of the with TCPV and NTPV in particular to figure out how best to bring those systems into the fold of the much more larger and comprehensive operations and management that happens on those systems.
So could we simply impose the regulation that all systems have to be monitored by video inspection of the lines every 5 years with a report?
Certainly.
The regional board, you don't need to go any further than that, really.
I think that that is possible. Again, you know, what that would look like from a permitting standpoint, we would need to work on. But I think, you know, a waste discharge requirement that included some monitoring and reporting that, as you described, includes, you know, television monitoring of lines to ensure their integrity would seem on target. My experience with those smaller systems are they don't have the resources generally to perform that type of monitoring, and maybe that type of those requirements might be further encouragement for them to partner with some of the larger jurisdictions that do.
Well, yeah, we could, obviously it would take some time to impose a new standard, you know, given, you know, some kind of a deadline, but yeah. Is that something that we could consider in this round of changes?
I don't think it needs any change in our basin plan for us to do that. We have all that authority right now to impose where we feel that the discharge may threaten water quality. We can impose requirements on that for investigation and to evaluate whether their system does have an integrity that we need.
We added to the list.
I was gonna maybe suggest a couple of things we could do. My name is Lauren Kemper, for the record, the Assistant Executive Officer. Just want to give you a couple of ideas of tools that are already available. So the State Water Board has a general order called the Sanitary Sewer. It's a general order for sanitary sewer systems. And it is statewide, and it does only apply to publicly owned collection systems. There may be a way, we can investigate this, if there is a way for us to require private systems to follow the same order. You know, or maybe this board could adopt, you know, that same order and impose it on private systems of a certain size, that type of thing. So that's one tool that we have that requires that kind of inspection and monitoring. And then, as Chuck said, we can use our 13267 order authorities to require investigation or reporting. We have the other systems that Bob didn't mention are, in addition to these small housing, sometimes subdivisions, condominiums, we also have a number of mobile home parks, which have typically had some of the biggest problems around the South Shore. And over the years, we generally have responded to those through complaints where both us and the County Environmental Health Department will respond to a spill or a failed system collection line, and we've issued cleanup and abatement orders in those situations to, again, require additional investigation and repair and, you know, that type of thing. So we have, those are the tools we have, and I think for the Tahoe Basin and related to the nearshore effort, we may want to look at targeting certain areas rather than go after everybody at the same time, but those are some of the choices you have. You know, do you do it kind of incrementally, or do you just put everybody under the same set of rules? I think it's unfortunate that State Board's order just sort of exempted the private, and I don't know the rationale for that, but that would be something we could go back maybe and see if there's a way to apply those requirements.
Sure. In many cases, the consequence of a small leak are not great, but in the case of the Tahoe Basin, there are consequences. Mm-hmm. So I think we're really aiming toward the Tahoe Basin as being a unique case.
One other comment on that, I think it's worth noting that most of the lines that are along the lake shore and that are most exposed to sort of the direct hydraulic connection to Lake Tahoe are those that are managed by the larger facilities.
Other than Chinkley.
point well taken. I think, as Laurie indicated, I think targeting Chinkley and some of those that are you know, that do have that connection would make sense in our future.
Eric, this is, I want to add to that. I've been also meeting with some of my colleagues around the lake about this situation because some of these folks don't have money to make this kind of change, and they also have drinking water problems, so they have two corollary problems they're struggling with. And so I had to talk to our colleagues. The hard part is, I mean, there's not a lot of funding for these folks, and even if they wanted to make these changes, you know, how do they get the funding for that, which is a challenge. So we are, it's a difficult issue.
In most cases where video inspection is done, the larger districts own their own equipment, mm-hmm. but there are services available that just bring their own truck out and do a video for you and a report. And although it's not inexpensive, but I think it might be within the budget even of a smaller district because they're not going to have any capital expense. It's really a time and materials kind of thing. So,
I apologize, Mr. Sandell. I was focusing on the ultimate disposal of the waste and didn't quite catch your implication for the collection systems themselves. Because all of those do ultimately go to a public collection or disposal system.
I had another question on the low threat discharge prohibition exemption.
Yes.
We will see. The actual language for that at some point, because I think there's probably going to be some discussion about it.
Right, and in the conditions that were indicating that would grant such exemptions, those are in your packet. I welcome any feedback, drop me an email, or give me a call anytime to give me your thoughts on those, whether you think those are appropriate, adequate, or other controls may be appropriate.
Ms. Fox?
Just a few rambling comments. On the anti-degradation policy, that seems to be the only area where there's two options listed. I would certainly support option one over option two, and it sounds like staff feels that way as well, pointing out that option two would be more difficult to monitor, and it certainly seems more onerous than option one, so I just want to weigh in that I think option one is a better option for us to consider in the updated policy.
There is another option as well, Ms. Cox, and that could be to identify a new prohibition exemption on the degradation of water quality explicitly rather than pointing to the policy itself. So that is another option that wasn't identified in the materials there. But I think that is really already covered under the prohibition that we are proposing to add on any unauthorized discharge of waste. The board has that, either has that authority already to deal with it, or with this new proposed prohibition on unauthorized discharges, even more so has that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. On the mixing zones, I think that's a great idea. It certainly adds more flexibility for the staff. I just like how the updates were going to simplify the process, create greater transparency, eliminate some confusions. On the exemption of the low-threat discharges, I thought that was an excellent idea, and looking back on your chart on 10-18, you've listed conditions for exemption for all of them, but scientific instrumentation or water quality or resources study, I'm assuming that would be a non-applicable or none?
Well, there are some, if you'll see at the top of the table, there's some overriding conditions that must be met, right off the bat before the discharge type specific conditions. And so certainly any scientific instrumentation or other related type of discharge would have to meet those conditions. Mm-hmm. But again, if you have thoughts about the controls that you think might be appropriate to be added to that, I'd like to hear that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Jardine.
I think this does bring clarity. I like what you're doing with Chapter 5, like Tahoe Basin. That also simplifies the whole process, and it removing the inconsistencies, and I think we're on the right path.
So thank you.
Dr. Horn?
One of the things I'm learning in law school is that when there's a harsh rule, then there are more exceptions. And so I think that the changes you are proposing to make a lot of sense. And this has been a big project in the works for a long time. So go forth and make it happen.
Thank you.
I just have a couple of comments. Thank you for referring me back to my packet because it answered the two questions I had. And I join with Ms. Cox in her observation that option one is probably superior to option two. In terms of the anti-degradation issue, although I'm not sure either option actually fully resolves the question, but I'll think about that some more. And because of the type of person I am, I prefer things that are really simple and easy to understand, and I think this is a step in the direction of doing that with our plan. You know, everybody who is within the orbit of the agency is looking for some sense of uniformity and some sense of predictability. And so to the extent that things are uniform in their application and it's clear to understand what you can't do or if you want to do it, how you try to find an exemption, I think that's a better way to approach the situation. So I'm looking forward to seeing the final wording and appreciate the work that's going into this. Thank you.
Thank you.
Item 11, potential.